I live my life one day at a time.
Yo, 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 everybody. Welcome to the Little Steps Podcast. I'm Rekha Shankar. Today we're going to sit down with Jo Firestone. She's a show creator, producer, and host in New York City. She's got a ton of great shows every month, like Friends of Single People, Motherfucking Bingo, and Thunderdome 3000, which is a personal favorite of mine. So she's got a lot of awesome stuff to talk about with show producing and how to get your ideas out there. So let's meet her. I am here with Jo Firestone, host extraordinaire. Hello, Jo.
Hello.
So I'm just going to get right into it. You host a shit ton of shows. You host Thunderdome 3000, Inner Beauty Pageant, Motherfucking Bingo, Get Happy, Bullshit History, Friends of Single People. You did an art installation called Tiny Comedy Club. You have a little web series called Inside Inside. I just want to know, where do you get your ideas for all your shows?
Where do I get ideas for shows? I guess I kind of think of something I want to see, and then I convince some unsuspecting venue to host it, or to have me host my show there. Like, I wanted to do a Christmas show, and so I thought, I want to do something, I really want to do something where there's dancers. I really want to do something where everybody's face is painted a different primary color, and I really like sing-alongs. So then I thought, why don't I just do a show called Christmas Songs with Rainbow Dancers? And so that's scheduled at the Pit.
And that's awesome. So, like, when you come up with these ideas, you say it's just stuff you want to see. Mm-hmm. Where do you, like, what do you think about your sense of humor, like, makes you want to see something like people dancing with their faces painted?
Well, I feel like maybe it's not just, I don't know, I feel like sometimes it might be just me that wants to see that, but sometimes it's other people, which is good. Like, I don't know, I feel like I feel like sometimes I'm like, oh, that would be fun, and sometimes it really fails. Like, sometimes I think, oh, this is great, people will love this, and then it's terrible. It's like, it just ends, it's nobody comes to it, and it's like so poorly thought out. But, like, I'm trying to think of what really went wrong. Oh, like, I did this one show called The Book Report, which I thought would be just a big old hit. And it was, like, I got all these, like, shitty, like, 50 cent books. Can I say shitty?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So, I got all these, like, shitty 50 cent books at Housing Works. And, like, they're all with, like, really, like, terrible titles. Like The Detective and the Sex Worker. Or, like, Seashells on the Seashore. I mean, like, really shitty books. Like, you've seen the paperbacks. And I thought people could create summaries for them.
Yeah.
They can compete with, like made-up summaries. Yeah. And five people came. And it was so sad. And it was not, you know, and I thought it would be really fun. And it was just, people didn't agree with me. And then it's like kind of like, every time that happens, you're like, oh, maybe I really don't have a grasp on reality. And maybe I am a crazy person. But then something happens where you do get people to attend, and you're like,
right,
I'm not crazy, I see things. And so it just depends on the week, you know?
Yeah, totally. And, like, how did you discover hosting, first of all? Like, because you host so many things, and I feel like the idea of being a host isn't even a thing people think about a lot, that they can, like, create their own shows.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I don't know, I never really thought about, like, becoming a host, or, like, but I like, like, I really look up to people that do host things and put things together. And I think maybe the actual position of hosting didn't come because I wanted to host, but just because I wanted to create these shows.
Right.
And then I didn't have anybody to be like, hey, can you just be the front man of this? And so, like, just in order to, like, execute the vision, sometimes it's necessary to, like, be the figurehead of it.
And
And then it kind of just, I kept coming up with these ideas and wanting to do them, so then I guess it came out that I was more prominently doing this hosting thing,
because
that's what took up most of my time.
Yeah.
I guess that's how you kind of define yourself, by what takes up most of your time.
That's definitely true. And I mean, like, I guess long term, what's your ideal situation?
That's a really good question, because I think that's really important to do in this field of, like, comedy, entertainment kind of beginning stages. Yeah. I am trying, but I have no long-term goals. I just don't know what, like, at everything that I could imagine I'd want to happen, I can't imagine happening. I think probably the natural progression would be, like, creating concepts and selling them to television networks. Sure. But, like, I don't really see that happen. I mean, it's just, I feel like, I feel like in some ways I'm very optimistic and, like, kind of, like, dreamlike. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to do a show about cabinets. And then it's like, I make it happen. But then in terms of the long term, like, I'm going to host a television show. It's like that seems so unrational to me.
Sure. And, like, what about it seems unrational, I guess?
Well, I guess it just, I don't know. It just seems easier to make things happen on, like, with your own will. And yeah. It's like when you have to depend on, like, 7 television executives to say, okay, 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 okay. Yeah. Like, then it's like, whoa, I don't stand a chance. But it's like, if it's like up to me to be like, get this to happen, get some people there and make it an exciting thing, then I could do that. But it's just like, that's why I don't really have any, I'm hoping like maybe I die when I'm 30, you know, and then it's like, I'm just like, okay, I did some stuff.
Did know? What I had to do.
Yeah. Maybe I don't hope that I die when I'm 30, but I'm thinking I might, you know.
I don't think you, I think you'll be good.
Okay.
So what did you study in college, and why?
I studied, I had a major called American Studies, which is a, like, you, it's so stupid. It's like you read books to, like you read, like, literature in order to interpret history at the time.
Right.
Yeah. It was really not very practical, but I got to read a lot of books.
Yeah.
And learn about history.
That's cool. I mean, yeah. Why did you end up choosing that as your major?
I just ended up taking a lot of classes in it, and then I dropped out of college for a little bit, and then mm-hmm. I came back. And when I came back, it was kind of just like, I was trying to take as many classes as possible in order to graduate on in a certain amount of time, and I just ended up wanting to take these kind of classes.
Yeah,
it was not really, again, like, not very forward thinking, which is maybe a pattern in some other people's lives.
Well, it sounds like you just followed what you wanted to do, and then, like, saw that it had a label later, almost. Like,
yeah, maybe let's hope that this is, yeah.
You know, like yeah. Oh, I like reading and I like learning about this kind of stuff. Oh, this seems to be, like, American Studies.
Yeah,
sure. And, like, I love making my own events. Oh, it seems that I'm a host.
Yeah.
Of things. So what did you do when you graduated?
When I graduated, I went on tour with a show I wrote with my friend Dylan Marin. He's a really wonderful person. He's on a web series right now called Whatever This Is. It's a huge. Alan Cumming was just on it.
Oh, wow.
And he's a New York neo-futurist.
Cool.
And he and I went on tour with a show we wrote in college, and we just did, like, we kind of created our own tour, and I took this car, and we drove around the country with this play we wrote called Ridgefield Middle School Talent Night, and it was, like, a two-person middle school talent show.
Yeah.
And we tried to book it and stuff, and we tried to do this thing where we donated all the proceeds to, like, financial aid at whatever college we went to.
Oh, wow.
But we got so broke. We were so broke by the end of it, which, you know, I think it's like a lesson to learn. If you're starting off, just take the money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to be so broke. Just get whatever money people are throwing at you, like, just put it in your wallet, you know, just,
yeah.
But, yeah. And then after that, I went to St. Louis. I'm from St. Louis. And then I just was working as, like, a waitress and a cook. And, I started producing these shows in this basement of this very strange, eclectic store. It had a basement, and it was called Cranky Yellow, and I just started producing these variety shows there with, like, there's a bunch of, like, creative people in St. Louis, especially around this area called Cherokee Street, and yeah. So I started creating these shows called It's Too Late for Fun Time, and we would get base shows off of Craigslist ads. Like, it was a kind of... And they were kind of funky things. And then I did that for a while. And then Dylan convinced me to move to New York. So we moved to New York.
And did you have any prospects in New York before you moved?
Well, we'd done this Ridgefield show right. A couple times at the Pit and the Magnet. So yeah. We kind of felt we had, like, a few roots there. And, like, we'd done it at Ars Nova. And so we felt like we'd had, like, a little bit of a base to start.
Yeah.
And then we started doing shows together here again.
So about the Ridgefield show, mm-hmm. like, what inspired you to create that?
Dylan and I, like, we were in a sketch comedy group together, and we lived together for a while, and we just spent all our time together. We were pretty inseparable. And he and I found each other very funny, and then we wanted to make a play because there was a lot of, like, you could... It was a really great... There was, like, a really great space for student theater, so you could kind of make whatever you wanted, and within a budget, you could spend a little bit of money on it. And so Dylan had this idea to make a middle school talent show, and my mom was a middle school counselor at the time, so she was, like, feeding into this, like, these ideas, and then we kind of created this whole show. And we didn't expect it to be anything, and then, like, the first night the second night, we had, like, 150 people there, and we were like, what? And then it was kind of like this, like, I think it's, my mom is a school counselor, and she labeled it as, what is it? It's called, it's the word you use when you don't have self-esteem, but you have
self-worth?
You know, it's like self, I'll think of it later, but it's like, it's when you don't have self-esteem to begin with, but you have enough successes that you start to believe in yourself anyways.
Mm.
And so this was like this moment where it's like, oh, wow, this is something that I can do. Because I never really thought about being a comedian or anything.
Yeah.
And so it's like, and I hate myself, but it's like, there's like, when you have something that you're like, oh, people appreciate this, then you can kind of keep going.
Yeah. And like, when
self-efficacy? Something like that.
Oh, yeah. And when you created the Ridgefield talent show, how did you, like, the idea of going on tour, I think that's also something that, like, seems so out of reach for a lot of people. Like, the idea that, like, oh, only things like UCB Tour Co. go on tour. Like, mm-hmm. I can't go on tour. How did you guys, like, set up that plan for yourselves?
It's really difficult. Like, I agree. It's, like, not an easy process, and it's, like, you just have to, like, you, maybe you think you're self-reliant, but it's, like, you have to, like, really just, like, rep yourself out there. And it's, like, you have to promote on site, and you have to kind of, like, network the shit out of yourself. Like, to get people to trust you that you have a product that will get, that will, like, that they can rep and get their friends to come to, and then that you can live up to, like, it just takes a lot of, like, chutzpah, you know, and so, like, to network and to find places to go, and then to actually get there is also, like, the driving and you're kind of tired, you know, it's a long process, and I'd say if you're going to do it now before you get any older, because it's, like, it's really it's a lot of energy it takes, and, like, to find places to stay or to sleep in your car or to eat McDonald's every day. It's a good experience. I'm glad I did it, especially with Dylan, even though he didn't know how to drive at the time, so I drove.
Yeah.
Oh, I logged a lot of miles. But, like, do it if it's, like, if you have a close friend or, like, a best friend or, like, just somebody that you can stand being around for 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And, like, sleeping in just, like, the floor of a car, you know, like, Jen, just, I think it's not as far away as you think. It just takes maybe like five times the effort it would take to book a show in a city where you live.
And like going back to that effort of like booking outside of where you live, what do you have to do to represent yourself? Like, what did you reach out to people, like cold calls?
We did cold calls. Cold calls didn't really work very well, though. I mean, it's mostly like you knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody. So it's like, that's kind of hopeful because it's like, you might think, oh, I don't know anybody that lives in other cities. But like, you know somebody that might not be in entertainment that knows somebody else that knows somebody that does a show. So it's like, you just kind of have to ask around. Like, pick a place you want to go and then kind of investigate from there. And you could use Facebook or something, I'm sure. Also.
Yeah.
Also, we didn't really use the internet very much. This was, like, 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the whole, like, Facebook thing wasn't as, like, useful.
Yeah.
You know, or, like, we weren't really active on Twitter or anything.
Right.
But I think with that, you could super, it would be, make it a little easier.
Yeah. That's awesome. And, you know, on a very real note, with doing tours like that and doing any sort of show, like, how do you deal with being broke or like kind of knowing that like you're putting money into something that you might not know the result of?
Yeah, that I kind of think that every time I put on a new show. I'm like buying face paint. I'm like, why?
Right.
I did a show last year that put me in the hole like big time, and I was like, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
It's like an investment in any business. I mean, that's the weirdest thing about this, and this is what I've learned, which is the weirdest part about, like, if you're starting a monthly show or if you're starting anything where you're creating something where your people expect a consistent result. Like, if you put on a show, and it's a monthly show, and 100 people go the first month, and say 40 of them want to come back. Which, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So, like, 40 people come back, and they expect the same exact thing, because you're a product. They bought a ticket to a show. Like, you buy a ticket to Justin Timberlake, you expect to see Justin Timberlake at that level again.
Yeah.
And that's the weird thing about doing comedy at this level, because it's, like, mostly for your friends, and you don't see yourself as a product, because there's no fucking money involved.
Yeah.
But when there is a little bit of money involved, and strangers start to see you, they expect the same product every time.
Yeah.
And it's like that idea that you're selling this idea of yourself, and it's yourself are the business or the product. So it's like you're putting money into this business, like by taking classes.
Yeah.
And stuff, like that's why you can write it out on taxes, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like you're spending money on classes and like you're spending money on props and costumes and whatever the fuck you're going to spend money on. But it's like, all of that is to create this product that people can come to see as consistent.
Yeah.
You know.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it, because I do find that, you know, so many times money is a factor that people don't even realize is like their immediate wall. Mm-hmm. Of like, no, then I can't do that. But it's like, it is an investment in yourself. And like,
yeah.
I guess my follow-up question is like, what, you know, makes you believe in your idea enough to like consider it an investment in yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think that I don't know what makes you believe in it. I mean, there really is no rationality to it. I think you just have to be like kind of a little bit loopy enough to be like, oh yeah, they want to see a play about trees, you know? And then it's like you somehow, I mean, I think you have that delusional quality if you are putting yourself out there in that performance arena at all.
Yeah.
But this is what, like, even with these improv shows, like with Kaleidoscope.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you see Kaleidoscope once.
Yeah.
And you see a performer.
Yeah.
Like, say you see, like, Amelia West.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I saw Amelia West and I thought she was really funny.
Yeah.
The next time I see her, I expect her to be very funny.
Yeah.
I mean, she will be very funny, but it's like, this idea that you get, even if there's no money involved in Kaleidoscope, and it's like
the idea that there's like not a human element to these people, that they are like
but that's what happens when you go on stage.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, and I mean, arguably, like for certain things, depending on what it is, that could take some of the pleasure out of it. Do you find that happens? Like when having this like kind of high expectation on you to just like perform like a soldier to this audience, kind of?
Well, you kind of forget that when you're doing it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or if you do, you're super in your head. You got to get out of it. But it's like, I think if you're in the right state of mind and you're out of your head, you don't think that they expect it, and then you can kind of just be yourself.
Yeah.
And ideally, yourself is good enough.
Yeah, totally. Kind of switching gears. Mm-hmm. What did you want to be when you were younger?
Bette Midler.
Why did you want to be Bette Midler?
I just loved her. She was so good in Hocus Pocus, and she was so good in, she was in, I just listened to a lot of her CDs. Like,
yeah.
She was such a show lady. And, like, what else did I see her in as a kid? I'm trying to remember what I saw her in a lot as a kid. No, something else. There's Mermaids. Is she in Mermaids?
I don't know.
I haven't seen her in a while. No, no. Anyways, but I loved her so much.
Yeah.
But I think I think I wanted to be Bette Midler. But then again, you can realize later on that you can't be another human when you grow up.
So you had like a performance interest from when you were younger.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And what was the very first show idea you had? Like, whether or not it was when you were like, you know, in college or when you were like five. Like, what was the first like thing you can remember putting together?
I used to direct my little neighbor kids in shows in my garage.
Nice. What kind of shows?
I think they were like dramatic.
Yeah.
I think there was like, they played parts. I used to also direct my friends like in fifth grade. We used to make these little videos to John Denver songs. They hated it. They always hated it.
Yeah. What was the very first show you like show you created and hosted, whether or not it was in the city or not, like the first show you consider like a show?
I guess the show would be this Ridgefield Middle School Talent Night.
And so I guess you told me about like the resources you had and like kind of friend of a friend of a friend reaching out to like picking a city.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of going from there. How did you like feel after your first show that you did, knowing all this work you put into it and like how it succeeded?
Well, that's the weirdest thing, is that as a business model, this kind of like producing work and then being in it, it doesn't really work.
Yeah.
Because it's using two parts of your brain, where it's like that promoting aspect and then actually working on the content. It's like you can't really do both. It's like a flawed business model. But
yeah.
So I think in that way, like you don't, when you're actually doing the performing of it, it's like you don't really think about all the work that led up to it. You just think like, are there people here? Are they responding to it?
Yeah.
Because your brain kind of cuts off. You know, like you don't think about what vomit looks like when you're, you know, knitting, you know.
Perfect analogy. Awesome. And did you, when you started doing all this stuff, what were your insecurities when you started, like, creating more and more, like, events?
My insecurities, it's always like, nobody's going to come to this. I never think anybody's going to come to these shows.
Yeah.
And sometimes they surprise me, and sometimes I'm like, I was right. Good thinking. Like, it's like you could kind of congratulate yourself for knowing you're going to fail, which is not the best mindset to have.
Sure,
but,
sure.
What was I most nervous about?
Yeah, what were your insecurities about doing this kind of stuff?
My brain kind of shuts off when I'm on stage and kind of performing, and so, like, I don't really know what I've done, if it works or not.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of blacks out. So, like, sometimes I'm like, oh, can I do this stuff? Like, I think a lot of people have said this. It's like that fraud thing. Like, oh, I'm not very good at this. And then, like, you don't really know. I try not to record any of my shows.
Yeah.
So I never have to watch them again.
It's very much like that kind of improv concept of, like, living in the moment. And, like, if you go back and, like, criticize yourself or whatever, like, how helpful will that be to you? Do you find that, like, you are able to handle your insecurities better now, or that, like, you're still working on?
Yeah, I kind of, like, because, you know, the weird thing is that I think the audience is really in tune to that stuff. And, like, especially if you're hosting, you just have to seem, like, the most important thing is, like, to seem like you're love in it, you know? And, like, I know it's so fake and stupid, but, like, you really just have to, in some way, you can, like, kind of be, like, not into it or whatever, but, like, you have to seem like you're happy to be there because, like, they kind of take their cues off of you.
Right. That's true. And where do you think that, like, confidence or at least, like, iota of confidence comes from? Just, like, your past work or something else?
Kind of. I mean, I think it's just, like, if you, just in a show, like, in any show, if you're like, okay, let me just see this. If I pretend like I'm super into this, how does the audience respond? Right. And it's like, if you're like, if you start clapping along or something, and like, you start to like pick up on this. If you do it enough, you start to pick up, like, if you start to clap, the audience will start to clap. If you laugh, the audience will laugh. They'll come more comfortable laughing. So it's kind of like this, like, slow, like, call, like, the call and response kind of thing.
Yeah. And like, what other obstacles do you find that you encounter with hosting and creating shows?
I guess with any, like, a lot of people who produce shows have trouble with people dropping out.
Mm.
And so in order, like, so I don't like really, I really get, I'm not very good at booking people. And when they drop out, I'm not really good at booking other people right away. And so, I've tried to just do shows that are mostly reliant on audience participation. And so sometimes that works, but sometimes the audience, either it's too small or they don't want to participate. Right. And then you're like, oh, what do I do now? So it's kind of like figuring out, that is kind of always like you kind of falter, you kind of trip up and you're like, ooh, how do I do this?
Yeah. And do you feel like you've developed sort of like, do you feel like you're better at problem solving that now than you were before?
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
I think before I would have just, like, given up. Or I would have just said to cancel a show.
Yeah.
But now you kind of have to just, like, you learn what works.
Yeah.
And what doesn't.
How do you grapple with doing all this creative stuff, which may or may not make you any money and may actually take money away from you, and, like, living in the real world?
So I was working in food service for a while, I think maybe six years or so, and most of my jobs have been in food service, and I don't mind food service at all. I mean, I really like the fast-paced nature of it and stuff, but I hate rodents. Like, I hate them so much, and there's always rodents around for food service. And you have to kind of either have to stay out late or you have to wake up early.
Yep.
And I was, like, doing that a lot in New York, and I was so tired all the time. Like, I couldn't, like, I had a lot of early morning food service jobs, and I was so tired by the end of my shift that I wouldn't do any stuff at all. And it was like, and I wasn't really making that much money. Like, I was like, how much, I'm making this much money. If I figured out a way to, like, do shows that made just this much money, I'm not making that much money. Like, I'm totally poor no matter what. Like, if I just shifted a little bit, then I could try to not work in food service, and I could try not to be as tired all the time
with
stuff that is not, like, I don't know, it's just like, so I decided to just try it. I was like, I'm going to take a couple months and just try it.
Yeah.
And I was able to stay afloat, and now I'm picking up catering shifts again. Yeah. But, like, I just feel like, you know, I don't, it's a hard place to live. Like, New York is, especially in the wintertime, it's, like, cold and shitty, and, like, you always have to go to the bathroom, and it's just, like, and it's really expensive, and it's, like, I was like, you know, if it doesn't work, if making these shows and doing comedy doesn't work, I kind of want to know. I just want to know. Like, if I go broke and I can't live here anymore, then I'll know that I just tried my hardest, and that's why I gave up, because it didn't work.
Yeah. And what, like, to even kind of get further into that, like, how, what was that feeling like when you tried, just said, I'm just going to try it, like, and you, I guess, left your position in the food service industry? Wherever that may have been, we don't need to name names. You left that one position. Like, what thoughts led up to that, and like, what did that feel like for you?
Well, I spent most of my time complaining about my job, which is, I mean, I think that's a sign to quit any job, not necessarily to move fields, but like, if you're spending a lot of time being like, oh, I hate going to work, I hate doing, like, it's time to change your job, yeah. You know? But yeah, and I quit, and then, like, you know when you make a decision and you don't really fully think it through, but it's a bigger decision than you think, and yeah. Other people kind of remind you of that?
Yes.
And so, like, people kept reminding me of that, like, oh, you're really doing it, you're really going for it. And I was like, am I really going, oh, fuck. Yeah. And then I was like, yeah, I guess I got to really go for it. And the first month, I was, like, not good at it. Like, I didn't, that's the thing about, like, when you work for yourself, you have to kind of be working all the time.
Yeah.
Or, like, at least every day. It's,
yeah.
It's, like, a 7-day work week. And yeah. I wasn't doing that, and my shows weren't going, not, most of them weren't going super well.
Yeah.
And, like, I didn't have as many as I do now, I don't think. But then I kind of learned, like, I kind of learned how to, like, kind of set aside a chunk of time and every day. And then they're still, I mean, they're not, it's not smooth sailing, but
sure.
it's going better than before, because it really is your profit is in this, in the way I've constructed it, is a direct relation to the amount of work you put in.
Yeah, totally. And what are some of the feelings you get from getting to kind of live out all these ideas you have? Because they're all so different, and I'm sure they all kind of satisfy different thoughts and ideas you've had. So, like, how does that feel to you?
I don't know. I don't really think... I guess I still haven't thought of it as a whole. You know, I think that's kind of like when you're young and you're doing this stuff. And I feel young, even though I'm probably not as young as a lot of people doing this. But, like, I just... You don't really see all of your work as, like... Because it doesn't feel complete. You know what I mean? So, like, it's hard to see it as, like, a complete record of your work. I don't know. So, I don't really know what it means that I've done all this stuff. I don't know. Like, I think there's... It's weird because there's different people that go to each of these shows. Like, I have one show where it's a group of people and they only come to that show. And then I have another show and they only come to this show. And it's not... There's not a lot of cross audience for any of it, I don't think. Well, yeah. It's like they're very sectioned off.
Yeah. Well, let me take... What's your most successful show?
My most successful show is Punderdome 3000.
And let's actually just go kind of through that. Like, how did you come up with that idea? And, like, since it's now kind of your most successful show, like, how does that feel?
Well, I came up with it. My boss at the time was telling me about a pun competition that happens in Austin.
Yeah.
And she'd spent some time in Austin. And then I did this thing for a while where I would book spaces and then come up with shows, because, like, I kind of, it helped to have a deadline.
Yeah.
And so I was so excited because I booked Southpaw. And what I didn't know was I booked the basement of Southpaw, which is not, it shouldn't be a space for performance. I mean, it's not anymore. It's a kiddie gym now, but we booked, she gave us the basement of Southpaw, and it was like, I was like, we're going to do a pun competition. I bet Brooklyn would really like a pun competition. And then I got my dad to fly in and help co-host it. And then he was just hosting it for a while.
Wow.
I was just producing it. He was the host. And then the first one had like 40 people there, I think. And this woman from The New Yorker was planning to write a piece about it. And she did. Eileen Reynolds, she wrote a piece about it. And then it kind of, the next one had like 100. The first time we got it on the Nonsense Listserv, which was great, because do you know the Nonsense Listserv?
I don't.
It's really cool. It's run by this guy named Jeff Stark, and it's, he does like cool events that happen throughout the city. Some of it is, it's like, I think it's kind of like the origins of the, what's that sketch on SNL? Stefan.
Oh, yeah.
Some of it sounds a little bit like Stefan. It's like very like cool and like hip and all kinds of crazy stuff going on. But yeah, they listed Punderdome, which is so nice.
Hey, everybody. Sorry for the interruption. At this point in the interview, there was a little bit of a microphone malfunction on my mic. So you just might notice that my voice is a little lower. Still same great content, same great Joe Firestone, but just a little heads up. Thanks.
And then from there, it kind of grew.
Yeah.
And then it kind of became what, I mean, this last one we just did on Tuesday the 5th.
Yes.
That was our 31st Punderdome.
Yeah, nice. And, like, you guys always have really cool celebrity guests and stuff there. Like, how do you even reach out to these people? Like, the comedy critic for the New York Times, Michael Showalter, or people like that. How do you get these people's, like, information?
Well, my dad somehow got in touch with... My dad always gets in touch with the writer, and I always get in touch with the comedian. Mm. There's usually two. And I don't know how my dad got in touch with the comedy critic of the New York Times. But with Michael Showalter, I actually just Facebook messaged him.
That's insane.
It's so crazy. I don't understand why he said yes.
Yeah.
And then he said yes a second time.
Yeah.
When he had disabled his Facebook account, probably because of people like me.
Yeah.
And I just had his phone number and texted him. It's like, so nice. Like,
that's insane.
He's so nice. And,
wow.
Yeah, and then, like, there's been just really, like, because, like, we don't, like, they just do it for free, and they just do it to, like, give commentary on pun makers. Like,
yeah.
Like, John Glazer has been super, he, like, has worn our t-shirt everywhere. Like,
oh, my God.
It's just, like, there's been so many really nice people that, like, that you wouldn't expect the people to just be so generous with their time.
Yeah. And what has been sort of, like, what kind of things have you taken away from, like, creating so many shows, like, in terms of just, like, following your own creative vision and, like, work ethic?
I don't know. I guess in creating all these shows, I have learned that I need to work harder. Like, and that's the thing. It's, like, I know so many people with monthly shows and, like, everybody that wants to start these monthly shows. These monthly shows are, like, really tricky, because it's like there is a certain point in every monthly show's like birth and growing cycle where it's like the first monthly show is awesome because all your friends come, and then the second monthly show is like a little bit less awesome because fewer of your friends come, and then it's like as it goes on, it's like your friends start to like peter out, you know, and you gotta figure out a way to keep doing it and keep making the venue happy. And getting people that are not your friends to get in the door.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, it takes a lot of work, at least the way I'm doing it. I mean, maybe other people have found a magic to it, but it's tricky.
Yeah. What do you try to, what are your, like, methods to try to get other people in?
I try to get some press write-ups. Let's see what else. Just, I think kind of just, what it has worked for me is kind of getting... setting an expectation where, like, the audience is going to be involved in a good way. Like, nobody's going to be super embarrassed, or if so, we're all going to be embarrassed for being there. You know, it's, like, kind of creating this environment that's, like, very supportive of weirdos. Yeah. I think that's kind of what I'm trying to create.
Yeah. And, like, in terms of getting those press write-ups and stuff, like, how do you even begin to do that? Like, do you just, again, is that another thing where maybe you cold call, or is that a thing where you know people?
I think you cold call at first. I didn't know anybody at all. I was just kept emailing these like press outlets and just kept emailing them. And then sometimes they would like ideas and then they would email me back. And then I found out their name, and then we have a name, first name basis kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of, it's like, I really had no connections at all. I was kind of just trying to sell them on my idea.
Yeah. And how...
Oh, that's the one thing, is creating shows with simple, explicit titles.
Oh, okay.
Every show I've done has a kooky title. It just burned to the ground. Because I have no name and no... There's no name recognition for me,
sure,
or the brand, quote-unquote. But, like, yeah, that's the one thing I would advise to people. Like,
yeah,
if you're thinking about naming your show Cookies and Wood, like, don't. Just name it. This is a sketch show, you know? Yeah. Just, yeah.
And what, like, in terms of selling your idea, like, what have you learned about doing that over the years?
I've learned a little bit more how to write more explicitly, like, clearly and concisely, like, these press releases or these, like, these little blurbs, like, promotional blurbs, like, how to write them in a way that seems like the event will be fun without saying this event is a fun event, you know, and, like, trying to make it, and trying to, like, kind of ways of writing that make it seem like it'll be an interesting event without saying, like, fun, interesting, funny, hilarious. Yeah. Like, because those words mean nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally. And, like, even getting further into that, like, to do a press, like, do you do, like, official press releases?
No.
Okay. Because I was going to say, like, there's, like, a whole, like,
I know.
Thing of that, too.
I know.
So it's cool that you're kind of doing your own, like, carving out your own way in that and just writing your own, like, what makes sense to you. Because, yeah, that's, I don't know, I think that's cool.
Oh, thanks.
cool. So if you had to give any advice to someone who wanted to start putting on their own monthly shows, what would you say to them?
I guess I would ask them if they really wanted a monthly show or if they just... Because I think sometimes, I think you kind of have to love producing. Like, you have to love that aspect in order to do a monthly show. Like, I think if you just want to put yourself out there, like, do a one-off show. Or, like, do get people together that you like and get them to help you produce the show. Like, I feel like it's, like, some kind of street cred in the comedy community to, like, have a monthly show.
Yeah.
Like, everybody has a monthly show, which is awesome. But it's, like... I think it's just one of those things where it's like, if you really want to produce something, I'd say go for it. But I think it's, in other ways, it's like, this might not be your medium. Just like stand-up might not be your medium, or improv might not be your medium. It's like a, just as much of a time investment, you know? Right. And like, I think it's a cool way to like associate you with like a whole entity of a show, you know? But it's also like, I think it's not the only way to, like, put your name out there.
Right.
But I think for those wanting to do that, I think it's, I think finding a space that you can have a relationship with the the people that run it, I think that is very important, because I think it's just, it's way more moving parts than you think. Like, the, like, from the, like, ticket sales to the, to like the stage lighting, to the sound, to the soundboard, to the music, to the people in it, to where everybody is when they need to be there. It's like there are so many pieces moving around, and like you could get pretty stressed out, you know. And it's like having a place where you feel comfortable in, like, knowing how to work the soundboard or knowing where things are. I think it's like that's crucial. Like, if you were to tell me, can you do it in a huge cool space that has no support, or like an oven, you know, I'd be like, okay, I'll choose an oven, you know, like it just, if it was like run well and clean and or just like people that work there are responsive to you, you know. Like, I've done shows, so many venues that they either hate me or I hate them, and it's just like they don't want me there, and it's like it really kind of affects your show. You know, like, if you have a venue that's just, like, doesn't give a shit about you, it's, like, you're not going to really feel super, like, let's do this, you know?
Right, totally.
You need support wherever you can find it.
And if you, like, had to give someone advice on just, like, the self-preparation, like, the mental preparation of, like, even just moving parts of, like, the physical show aside, just, like, how to mentally gain confidence or gain enough self-efficacy to, like, keep moving forward, what would you say?
I guess I would say to, like, just figure out what you, like, the next time you laugh really hard, figure out what you're laughing at and kind of get that into, like, use that as a way to create what whatever you're creating. Because I think it's easier to be funny when you're comfortable, you know, and easier to laugh when you're comfortable and, like, laugh really hard and I feel like if you can kind of think less about what you think other people will think is funny or what other people will like and more about what you like, you know, and what really makes you laugh, I think then you can create more honest stuff and more stuff that really matters to you, and then it will, I think it, that kind of seeps into the audience and what they're thinking and what they, how they feel about the show in general. Like, I think about how, like, if I was to watch, if I was to have a choice of watching two movies, and one movie was Cinderella and one movie was Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, I would definitely choose Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. But, like, I might think that most people would like Cinderella more.
Right.
You know? And so, like, I might make something more Cinderella-like. But really, I should just go with the Willy Wonka. Because, like, the people that are bound to also love it will come. And rather right. than, like, the people that feel lukewarm about Cinderella, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's not very articulate, but you know.
No, I mean, because it's a thing of, like, if you follow the thing you like,
yeah.
you are so much more likely to produce a product that you can, like, shine.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
other people will notice that.
Yeah, which, yeah.
Because you're talking a lot about how the audience can really pick up on your energy as a host.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that makes total sense.
Yes, what you said, yes.
Cool, is there anything else you wanted to add, just, like, for anybody that's wanting to do this kind of stuff?
I guess this is the place to do it. If you're thinking, I kind of want to do a show, just do it. And maybe it's a monthly, or maybe it's a one-off, or maybe it's a weekly or daily show. Just do it. And because there's so much space in New York. And there's not that much space other places. So just do it. And if it fails, then you can say, well, if it fails, you're in good company.
Yeah.
That's the beautiful thing about this industry, is that you're in such good company when you fail.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. And if people want to see more of Joe Firestone, where can they go?
I have a blog that I post about upcoming shows. It's called meatballpresents.tumblr.com. And that's the company, Meatball Presents. And so you can't really see a calendar. I should probably make a calendar. But you can just see the show that's next coming up.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Joe. This was mm-hmm. awesome. And thank you guys for listening.
Yay. Yay.
You recoded the coffee box, power shots mixed, fly over me. My accurate jabs connect like rotary. Make you notice me, be like, got you. Dude's awesome, totally. When he rides the baseline like Ginobili, I'm vocally unmatched globally. With the flow, so underground, but mold, public and notary push. In this era of hustle and push, we must load mental ammunition and bust. Thus, I'ma hold you down, I got you. One more repetition, I'ma spot you. This is for my blue collar work and be like guzzling, got you. DVD selling, keep hustling, push. If you represent the struggle, then push. Keep the pieces of the puzzle and push. Never let them place the muzzle, just push.